Thank you, Clayne. I guess quite a few people have already covered what's happened with costs. I apologize for missing the early part of the symposium. I had another presentation to give elsewhere. But a bunch of people worked with me on this, on various parts of it. We weren't all a team on all of it, but I'm not going to explain what everyone did. We'll just go on past that. But we had a series of winter meetings this past year. We had 5 meetings all over the state, took the same program to 5 distinct regions of the state, and we had our clickers that we took around with us. I don't know if you've used them, but you just pass them out as everyone comes in, and you have your questions up on the screen, and everyone answers them with the clicker, and it keeps track of what the answers were. And so we got some information on their perceptions and their strategies, and then I'll talk about our inputs to those strategies. But it's not going to surprise anyone that what they said at that point in March 2009 was that fertilizer was the number one cost concern. I'm not sure they'd answer the same today, because prices have changed substantially since then, but 60% said fertilizer out of 130 responses, and each person was only allowed to answer once on this question. So land, seed were somewhat of concern, but fertilizer was far and away it as far as cost concerns. And you've probably seen more graphs than this about what happened to fertilizer prices. The nitrogen and phosphate prices went way up and then crashed way down. Phosphate and nitrogen, the potash price went way up. And as of the time we did the survey, it was still way up. That's probably February or March right there. It has come down some, but not as far as the other ones. And so, land costs were going up. Yeah, chemical costs were going up. But nothing was going up by a factor of 4 except fertilizer. And in many ways, it was probably one of the bigger dollar inputs to start with. Now, I could talk about... I'm going to talk about P and K, and I'm going to talk about nitrogen. I'm going to group P and K together, but I'm going to go with P and K first, both because we actually have more material on that, which is unusual. I'm a nitrogen person first and foremost, but in this case, I got more material on P and K, and I'm also doing it in recognition of the fact that for a 2-year corn-soybean rotation, P and K passed nitrogen in terms of total expense, and that has not been true in the past. So I think when they're thinking of where their cost concerns were, it was more with the P and K than it was with the nitrogen. They were upset about all of it. So we asked them how they changed their P and K management, and they got to answer multiple answers on this question. We had 240 responses roughly, and you can see there was a bunch that were kind of in the 15% to 25% range. One of those was search for cheaper. Well, good luck. and I'm not going to talk about that because we couldn't really help them with that. They can do that by themselves. But the first two that I'm going to talk about is reduced rate on corn and reduced rate on soybean. I think we have a little bit of information to offer there, and then I'll get to some of the other answers after that. So in these meetings, I already knew where we were going to be with these surveys. I didn't have to actually get the clicker results to know, and I was sure they'd be cutting back. And so I really emphasized, this is a mass balancing. These are elements. You can't make them. You can't crush them out of existence. If you carry them on and carry them off in the same amount, you're just where you started. And if you do something different than that, you're going to make soil reservoirs go up or down. So the fertilizer truck needs to equal the grain truck in terms of how much P, K, and nitrogen that you're putting on and taking off. And a lot of people really don't think of it in those terms. And so I think we're trying to push that agenda forward a little bit. But I also knew there would be a lot of people doing this. They're going to put on less than what they're taking off at least last year. And, I mean, part of it was weather. We had late harvest. Then we had wet weather. Then we had high prices. And all of those things are true again this fall. I just wrote a newsletter article last night starting at 10 o'clock for a special wet fall newsletter that's going out, being put together today. And we're going to have the same thing this fall. A lot of P&K is not going to get applied this fall either. But if you're putting on less, you better know what you're doing, or you may end up in a hole that's deeper than you thought there might be a hole. And I'm going to give you that may be kind of a, you know, picture that doesn't necessarily relate to farming very much. I'm going to give you the same example with real farming. We had some people growing grass. Now, most of our people put on more nutrients when they're growing grass than they take off, right? Well, they changed to growing some soybeans in 2008, and here's the yield map. And you might see something kind of interesting there. Anyone see a line kind of right there? What do you think is going on with that? This averaged, I think I can click without giving it away, but I'm not sure. Averaged 65 bushels up here, 30 bushels down here. Somebody knows. Well, you're just not talking. Different what? It was all grass, all fescue, but it was a different previous crop. This was pasture up here. This was hay down here. When you take that grass and you grow it and you carry it off the field, you're carrying a heck of a lot of potash off that field. And the same thing is true if you're growing silage or alfalfa or anything where you cut the stems and take the whole plant off the field. You're taking off in that harvest vehicle. I showed a grain truck earlier, but you know, a wagon that you're hauling hay off, you're hauling off a heck of a lot of potash. They did not replace it, and so they cost themselves 35 bushels of beans down here. Now, how much potash can you buy with 35 bushels of beans? Even at last year's prices, you can buy a lot. You could have replaced enough to make that up to full yield and still come out ahead in 1 year. So that's what I mean when I talk about that. You know, you can really get into a deep hole by screwing up and not putting those nutrients back on. And if you knew you weren't putting them back on and you knew, okay, I'm going to change to soybean and now I really need to take care of it, okay. You know, but don't do it blind. Some of the other tools that we were looking at, people were thinking about variable rate management, and that actually turned out to be the number one response. That they were shifting to that or thinking of that. And banding is another thing that we thought, well, we can do something with information that we've got or things that we know to address these management questions. So Ray Massey and I sat down together and we put together some tools, and I'm going to explain kind of how we came at the variable rate one. And what can you do with variable rate P and K? Well, you can spend more on soil sampling for sure and analysis. You can spend more on the variable rate application. So where are you going to return money on that? And historically, the stuff I've seen, there has been not much savings on P and K because you're still targeting basically the same recommendations and same levels. And you've got, in most cases, minimal increase or none. And most of the papers that I've seen that said, okay, we came out ahead, they calculated their yield increase from a theoretical response curve. They didn't actually have more yield. Now, I'm sure there's some exceptions out there, but that's the rule of what I've seen as a bulk. And I'm going to concentrate on the savings on P&K. I think the time was right to think about it with prices the way they are. Can we potentially save more on that using variable rate? And here's my thinking is partly derived from the fact that we did a whole network of response experiments all across Missouri, corn, soybean, and wheat, total 69 between the three crops. And our target level is right there for phosphorus. It's 45 pounds per acre or 22 parts per million. Now, in that network of experiments, if we were above 30, average everything together, I mean, average, say, 30 to 40 together, yield response to P was zero. I mean, 30 all the way on up to whatever it went up to, yield response was zero. Average with the below 30 sites, which wasn't that many of them together, and yeah, we had a response. Not a big one, but a statistically significant response if we were below that. So why is this up here when we're not seeing any response till we're down here? Well, here's my thinking on it. I wasn't there when the levels were set, but my thinking is that this field would be a good example of why they set it that way. They knew what they were doing. This field has a field average of 35, which would be 17 if you're a parts per million person. That would mean, by what I just told you, that you're not going to get a yield response unless it's below 30. We'd get no yield response on this field, and we don't need to fertilize, right? But actually, 60% of the field, everything from what that line on up, is below 30. So the field average doesn't tell you that the field's above that. It tells you that, on average, that's what the field is. And so setting that target level at 45 means you're protecting full yield in those low test areas by just putting it everywhere and making sure that even the low parts of your field are above that yield loss zone. I'm thinking maybe we can do this cheaper with precision P&K management, finding out where those low test areas are and taking care of them without throwing fertilizer onto the parts that have plenty already. And of course, the higher the prices are, the easier it is to make this pencil out. So Ray and I came up with this thing. It's similar to Larry's in that there's an Excel spreadsheet behind it. And we put the best assumptions we could into it. We probably need to make it so users can get to the assumptions a little more than they currently can. Right now, what you can change the phosphate and potash costs. We've got five fields here that you can't change. Those were five fields that we just took from a service provider the first time that those fields were variable rate sampled to give us a reasonable population of what's the spatial distribution of nutrients out there in real fields. And then you can change these numbers here, which tell you what your soil test target levels you're going to use are. And so what I did, I said, okay, these are pounds per acre, again, remember. So that's 45 and 280. That would be 22 and 140. That's what we're saying. If you're doing uniform management, that's going to protect full yield. Now, we found the same thing with potash that we found with phosphate, which was we didn't find any yield response until we were two-thirds or below on our target level. So below 200, we didn't find any. We found yield response below 200 and not if we were above that. So I'm saying probably based on that network of experiments, we can drop this to 30 and 200 and not lose a bushel. But if we're going with uniform application, because of variability, if we don't want to lose a bushel, we have to keep it up where it is. And so what this thing does is as you change the prices and as you change these target levels that you're using, it tells you what's the 10-year net present value. Now, net present value is an economics term, and I'm not real clear on it, but basically one of the things it takes into account is the value of the money that you're spending, say, to buy fertilizer this year. And it says 10 years from now, after you've done this for 10 years, where are you? And where you are with the numbers that are currently up on here, you're $64 a head. And if we use these numbers, which I think are about the best numbers, and these prices, we come out on about on average $60 a head between all five of these fields. That's about average. And I can't change this right now because it has to have a bunch of software running in the background that I don't have. This is just a PDF. But as we take these prices down to something that's more in line with what we'd pay today, this number is going to go down. It gets down to 35 or 40. But it suggests that you can come out ahead on precision ag if you're using lower target values. And I think that's a reasonable thing to do. And we're in the process of going through approving that as an official recommendation right now. I mean, I'm not sure it's going to make it, but that's what we're working on. That's what I'm working on. I'm leading that suggestion. And so it's available online. It requires Adobe Flash Player, but it will let you change the numbers and that dial needle will move. I realize this is kind of a long one and you may not get it written down in time. I'll give you a card afterwards if you're interested and didn't get it written down. But it's one of the, there's another tool on there too, and that's the next one we're going to talk about, which is placement. And what is the return to placing P and K? I started in 2006 maybe when phosphorus prices had, you know, kind of gone up 50% from the previous. It was still way lower than it is now. I was getting calls, I want to get a band placing unit and cut my P and K rates in half. And not to pick on Jeff, but I think Minnesota officially recommends that, that if you place your P and K, you can put on half as much. And, well, that's okay, but let's get a little bit more sophisticated about it than that. And I'll tell you right off, we did this analysis and our answer is that it's hard to pencil out paying for a machine and doing this, given the way we analyzed it and looked at it. But we have, and that's true whether it's owned or rental ground. I'm sure you get that thing in your own extension programs. We got this rental ground, it's low testing. I don't want to invest in putting all this P and K in it. I'm going to ban low rates. Well, you're not spending as much on fertilizer, but you got a machine that cost you a whole bunch. You got someone sitting on it that's costing you a bunch. And, you know, can you really come out ahead? And we wanted to look at that. So, let's think about how we approach this. You're not likely to get an increase in yield. What you can do is you can get away with a lower soil test level because you're more efficiently delivering the fertilizer that you apply this year to that crop. But if you're applying half of the crop's uptake or half of the crop's removal, the other half has to come from somewhere. Even if you're delivering 100% efficiently the fertilizer you put on, the other half has to come from somewhere. So these people that are calling saying, I'm going to cut my rate in half and band, well, the other half has to come from somewhere. And at some point, as your soil test levels drop and drop and drop, they won't come from somewhere. And so, you know, you need to be aware of this reality. You can get away with a lower soil test level. That's true. Now, how much lower? We don't know. And maybe there's been some research done out there, and I have not dug very well to see how low can you let it drop and still make full yields as long as you band. But at some point, the soil is no longer going to be able to supply that other half, you're then stuck with a permanent obligation of banding crop removal rates forever. And you got a temporary benefit of you saved fertilizer for a while, you saved on your fertilizer bill, and the interest on that savings has to pay for you to continue to do that forever. Because as soon as you go to, I'm going to broadcast my removal rate, well, you're not going to get away with that because you're not going to deliver that fertilizer as efficiently in that year. So that was what we, the way we looked at it as we put this tool together. And so it's a similar kind of tool where this band, this dial will turn as you change your input costs and as you change where your initial values are. And so we'd start these low if we were looking at, I'm going to rent some new ground and it's low testing. We'd start them at our target levels if it was land that the person owned. Say, okay, we're going to let it drop to here. Well, I told you at 30 and 200, if we've evened everything out, so let's just assume that this has been variable rate fertilized to kind of even out, we can let it drop to 30 and 200 and not lose any yield. Well, if we're committed to broadcasting every year, I'm sure we can let it drop somewhat farther than that. I'm not sure how far. So I took it from 30 and 200 down to 25 and 150 and said, if we're broadcasting every year, we can get away with that. Well, I said, I know we can go lower if we're placing it. So I let it drop to 15 and 100. Now, if you're a parts per million person, this is 7.5 and 50. Those are pretty darn low numbers, aren't they? So even if you're letting it drop to 7.5 and 50, you're not making any money. After 10 years, you're $7 behind. Assuming that you purchased a new machine, but also that you were running that machine over 2,000 acres every year. So we tried to be generous on this in terms of how much use are you going to get out of that machine and can you pay for it. So as you take these prices up, you may get into a situation where it's profitable. Well, of course, those prices have come down since we first put these in. And so I think our conclusion is even more true now than it was when we developed this tool, that we can't necessarily be profitable. Here's where I really think we can do something. That is with measuring P&K response on farm. We've got lots of people who are willing to think about what they're going to do new who have yield monitors. And they've got 10 years of yield monitor data, and they still haven't used it for very much. Some have, but most haven't. Well, this is a really simple thing that they can do, and they can use their yield monitors, and they can use their yield monitor history. This guy, I talked to him on February 22nd. On February 25th, he went out and did this. You know, I just happened to be passing through and stopped and talked to him. See those four strips where they're white? He puts on P&K with a placement unit, strip till, which I didn't, I didn't talk to him too much about the economics that I just showed you in the previous slide, but the strip till may be a whole different thing. People tend to put them together, strip till and P&K placement. They don't have to go together. I don't know if he's making any money on strip till, but I am pretty sure he's not making it on P&K placement. He left four strips where he just turned that unit off on my suggestion. And what happened? Well, I was actually a little surprised. He did get a yield response to P&K. I'm thinking we have a lot of people in Missouri, based on various things that I've done and the fact that we can't get a yield response to P or K at our experiment station in Columbia. I think we have a lot of people who could go quite a while, but the beauty about this is you know when you're falling off the edge and it's time to catch yourself and start spending money on P&K again. So he got a yield response, 6 bushels of corn. We don't know if it was due to P or K because he just shut them both off, but he got a 6-bushel yield response. Well, when you look at what he spent on fertilizer, he got a 6-bushel yield response but came out $45 an acre behind. So he and I are both thinking pretty hard about this and what it means. It's a little more complicated than if the yields were the same, but he did put on more K than he took off, so he was actually building on K there because it was kind of low testing. And so he's going to get some more value from that money he spent than just what he got this year. That makes it more complicated. I'm not sure what the final answer is on this, but I think that the idea is a powerful one, and I think that people could do this for themselves without a whole lot of help. They need some help, maybe, and we're going to maybe try to get a program going where we offer this to people. One of the reasons why I think we often don't get responses is we do have a lot of subsoil nutrients. So this is a map. I've actually had these samples for 10 years, took them mostly for nitrogen work, but analyzed them for P&K because I wanted to know what was in our subsoil, and just this summer I finally got around to making this map out of them. And so what it shows is how much nutrients is in the subsoil as a proportion of what we're currently recommending be in the topsoil. So down here in the southeast corner, it was 4 times as much as what we're recommending be in the topsoil. Here, fairly dark brown area is 3 to 4 times as much in the subsoil as we recommend having in the topsoil. This golden color is 2 to 3 times as much. Here is 1 to 2 times as much. This is the only place in the whole state where phosphorus was lower in the subsoil than what we recommend having in the topsoil. And that test that I just showed you, guess where it was located? Right there. So he actually is in the region that has the lowest subsoil P in the whole state, and he still came out ahead not putting fertilizer on. But I think a lot of people that are over here, as far as phosphorus goes, they could go longer. Well, how about potassium? Well, in the whole state, pretty near, we're looking at 3 to 4 times as much potassium in the subsoil as what we recommend having in the topsoil. So we've got a tremendous reservoir of nutrients down in the subsoil that potentially could be tapped, and now with prices the way they are, maybe this is the time to do it. And yet you would still be safe. Switch gears, I've got a little bit on nitrogen fertilizer. Strategies to reduce input costs. Well, I'm going to say reduce losses, because even though you're not actually reducing costs, you may reduce cost per unit delivered to your crop if you can reduce losses of nitrogen. Also, I'm going to say it because we had another clicker question. So it's just something to put in there. We asked them what they had done, and one thing you'll notice here, they got to do multiple responses. We had about 160 on nitrogen. We had about 240 from the same group on P and K. That suggests that more people are really doing something and clicked more things on the P and K side than they did on the nitrogen side. So this isn't necessarily proportionate of how much total is being done, but of the things that were being done, what was being done. Number one thing was delaying fall anhydrous to spring. Well, that was pretty easy to say last spring, because the previous fall had been a late harvest and a wet fall, and you know, even if they'd wanted to do it, they weren't hardly going to get any of that done. But they didn't put any anhydrous on in the fall of 08, or not much, and so they delayed that till spring. What surprised me was this answer. We had more than 25% of the people who were doing something about nitrogen loss had done at least some side dressing. NSERV and ESN or Agritain were other answers they could choose, and a fair number of people chose those. So some people are doing additives. Now, they're not saving money on this. They're not reducing costs. They're spending more money to get NSERV, ESN, Agritain. But as I said, maybe per unit delivered into their crop, maybe they are getting it cheaper by doing that. And I think in many cases, probably they are. So that is things they're doing to reduce loss. But I'm really going to go back to the cost side. And what can you do to reduce nitrogen cost? Well, you can avoid over-application. You cannot put on nitrogen that's not giving you return. How are you going to do that? Well, you better make sure that you don't end up going under. And that's a tricky line to walk in a lot of ways. And the way people have handled it is just by being not way over, but a bit over, because it's usually more expensive to be under than over. Now, one of the things I've been doing for years is in my education program, tell them how much this varies. Now, that doesn't mean I got to answer what to do about that variability, but they need to know that it's not actually the same year in and year out. There's a lot of people who pretty much think all my nitrogen that my crop gets is from my fertilizer, and it pretty much, I know how much it needs and I'm set. I've got my answer. And some of them have got their answer from their own on-farm experimentation, and then when another year comes and it's the way wrong answer, they're really surprised. So I'm not going to show you the from field to field part, but that's a standard part of all of my things, is just to show, well, this field needed this much, and how much variability there is in that. I will show you the place to place within a field. We had 8 fields where we did this, and we had lots of nitrogen response experiments in every field. So I've got that little yellow rectangle showing you data that came from that. So we had 6 nitrogen rates from 0 to 250 within that little yellow block, and we knew what yields each of them made. And in this case, we had 100 bushels with no fertilizer, went up to about 155 at the plateau, and about 140, 130 pounds of nitrogen was what it took to optimize yield. So that's coded as yellow. You can see down here, yellow is 120 to 160. And this producer typically put on 150 pounds. So the places where it's yellow, what he was doing is right on target. Unfortunately, that's not very much of that part of the field that we studied. You got a bunch of places that are pink. They needed 160 to 200. All the red areas needed 200 to 250. Whereas over here, you got these green areas that needed 80 to 120, and the blue areas that needed less than 80 to optimize production. So it's kind of all over the board. We studied 8 fields, 7 of them were this variable, and 1 was about half as much. So How are you going to target that? How are you going to know which place needed more and which place needed less? And we've had a lot of ideas out there. The three data sets that I've been involved in and analyzed, these numbers come from them. And, you know, with yield, 2 to 20% of the variability in nitrogen need was explained. So if you put more where you yield more, are you going to do some good? A little bit, more sometimes than others, but not very much, really. You're not going to be very accurate in how you target if you go with putting more where you yield more. Soil nitrate, soil and quick test, soil conductivity, all less than 25%, and color, 53 to 77%. Now, I'm involved with some experiments where Newell has analyzed them and found numbers lower than this, so I should really lower this number. I don't want to give you a too rosy of a picture, but in the three sets that I analyzed, which were all fairly large, these were the numbers I got, but there's definitely some lower ones out there. So we're doing a program where we use crop sensors for rate diagnosis. We take sensors out there, put them on the front of somebody's applicator. It could be a producer, it could be a retailer. We put a computer in their cab that will read the sensors. It's got custom software that calculates a rate, and then we put it into their controller, and their controller changes something while we go through the field. In this case, it's a ball valve back here that opens and closes so that when it sees dark green corn, it closes that valve down and puts out a low rate. When it sees light green corn, it opens it back up again and puts on a high rate. But if it's a liquid machine or a spinner, it's going to be some different mechanism. There's always some kind of a control, you know, a physical control mechanism that responds to what the controller's telling it. We've now done a whole lot of these all over the state of Missouri, mostly in corn, but this is our second year doing it in cotton as well. And outcomes. In the first 4 years of the project, we broke even on yield, but we saved on our input cost. We identified those areas that didn't need that nitrogen and cut back, and then where it did need nitrogen, we're putting on just as much or more as the producer. 08 was a different year. It was very wet, and we ended up with a lot of nitrogen loss, both pre-plant fertilizer and also soil nitrogen that was there before the farmer ever put any fertilizer on. A lot of people don't appreciate that the soil already has a bunch of mineral nitrogen there at the time they go out there with their fertilizer applicator, but that nitrogen was in large part lost in 2008. So we actually increased the rate of what the farm compared to what the farmers put on, but we got a 9-bushel yield increase out of it, and we came out farther ahead economically than we had when we were saving on input cost, because we identified this was not the time to be saving on input cost on nitrogen. So, summary, fertilizer cost was perceived as the number one cost concern in 2009, and we looked at some strategies to reduce P and K rates, a general reduction. Probably a lot of people could get away with that and not be hurt, but it's dangerous. At some point, you're going to start losing yield, and how are you going to know when you're at that point? Variable rate can be profitable if you're using lower target values and mostly targeting the lower testing areas of your field for that input. Banding or placement, we found it was hard to pencil out. If you made your own machine and it was cheap, you know, there may be ways you could get around that and still come out ahead, but buying a new placement machine wasn't one of them. I really believe that on-farm testing has a lot of potential for people to do their own response. I mean, a soil test is supposed to tell them, am I going to get a response or not? Well, they can actually go out and find if they got a response or not. And that's more accurate in their own field than the soil test possibly could be. So I think it's fairly safe and a lot of potential for savings. Reducing nitrogen rate is tougher, in my opinion. We don't have as good of options. The crop sensors I'm comfortable with. However, not many people are going to do that. I'm not really comfortable with any other tools for going out there and cutting back on nitrogen rate other than looking at color in some way, shape, or form, because there's just too much else going on and too hard to predict when you can safely cut back. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.